In April 1995, breakfast radio in the UK was about to be turned on its head.
Chris Evans is a working-class lad from Warrington.
He will need to be managed.
And it would never be quite the same again.
The disc jockey Chris Evans,
saviour of Radio 1.
Here we go.
The Chris Evans Breakfast Show was about to launch on BBC Radio 1, and I was part of it.
He just came on with this optimism and energy and zest. Don't worry, I'm here now, it's going to be fine.
Is there any more to go? Have we got anything else to entertain you with? Of course!
That's the story.
I'm John Revel, also known as Johnny Boy, and along with Holly Hotlips and Dan the Sound Man, we were the team behind one of the most talked about radio shows ever. For the first time in 25 years, the three of us have got together again to share the stories and memories of what really went on when the mics went off.
Wonderful music, a talented jock, Monday to Friday from 6:30 to 9 o'clock.
This is Breaking Breakfast. Right. So I remember when the whole
don't,
radio
don't keep
one.
Saying I remember, because okay. I think that sounds really
bad.
You
don't remember anything. Now you're directing it now, are you?
John, when we first met, I was, I don't know, 19 or something.
I remember. Don't say I remember. You said I remember before and you don't remember anything. You're so fucking old. You said you don't remember last week. Well, I don't.
That's true.
What?
Anyway,
how have we managed to get this many episodes out of you? I don't know, John.
So I was 19. You were about 52 or something?
Yeah, yeah. About that. Oh, right.
And we were on Greater London Radio and we were doing various shows with Christopher. And you introduced me to Tina Ritchie.
On 94.9 FM, GLR News for London from the BBC.
Lovely Tina Ritchie, who was one of the newsreaders at GLR. And then when we went to Radio 1 and the Radio 1 kind of contracts were all being drawn up and I was obviously involved with all that nonsense, Matthew Bannister called me up and said, I'm thinking about Tina Ritchie for the newsreader. What do you think? And I said, well, brilliant, because we knew Tina from GLR days.
Mm-hmm.
We love Tina. She's brilliant. Great newsreader. Very professional. Also great fun.
Yeah.
And so I went back to Evo, said, Tina Ritchie. He said, brilliant, great. So I then go to have a meeting with Matthew and Tina. And I remember walking into Matthew's office and there was Tina sitting on the sofa. And here is Tina now in person sitting opposite me.
I didn't know that.
Didn't you?
I didn't know that it was Matthew that suggested me.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I always thought it was off the back of me working with Chris at GLR. So my first memory of Chris was, you know, I'm in the GLR little news pod studio thing and there I am reading the news and there's a sort of tap on the glass door that, you know, because you could see the studio he was working in and he's banging on the door and I'm trying to read the news in a really calm way and carry on, Tina, just carry on. And he squashed his face against the glass and he's banging on the door and I'm carrying on. So then he runs back round to the desk and I go, GLR News, this is Tina Ritchie. And he starts talking to me off the back of the news. Now, you know, in those days, nobody spoke to the newsreader.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I just, you know, carried on. And so that's really how it all began. But it was, you know, in those days, nobody spoke to the newsreader and the news was completely separate. And I think that was the beginning, the embryonic stages of Chris expanding
his team.
His team.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And he loved talking to you on the radio as well. That rapport at the top of the hour was so integral in our team.
Radio 1 Newsbeat, I'm Tina Ritchie.
Tina, meeting.
What?
No! On the air.
Yeah, go
no. Meeting on the air.
Okay.
Why can't we have a meeting on the air about it?
About what?
About what you've just been having a go at me for the last 3 minutes.
Nah.
We can't have a meeting on the air.
Oh, go on. What?
Team, no.
Oh, no.
Okay, team, no. Hall says no, so we're not doing it. No, Chris.
Meeting off the air about why we can't have a meeting on the air. Yeah. Then. We'll argue
listeners,
whether we can have it on the air.
Something's just happened.
No, Chris, no. Holly says no. Yeah. Holly says no, and absolutely not.
There's only
not.
One thing that will stop me from saying what I'm about to say.
Well, yeah. Anybody that was going to give him 2 minutes of material on the air was useful. And the great thing about Tina was that she was, you know, able to come back. But I think that was born out of the fact that we knew each other again. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd worked together for a couple of years.
Yeah, I was quite comfortable talking to him.
Yeah.
And he made you laugh.
He made me laugh, you know, and unfortunately he quite often made me laugh just before I was to read a news bulletin. So I was quite good. I got used to digging my fingers into my palms and putting a handbrake on things so I could read the news. But the thing about him, it was just like talking to a friend. You know, I felt very, very happy talking to him. And I, you know, listening to all that you were bantering about in between the hour and the half hour, I knew what was coming, possibly. I mean, there was always that element of, oh, my God, what the hell is he going to ask me now? And I think if he crossed boundaries and started really behaving badly during news bulletins, we would have had a problem. They were really worried about it, definitely. And I remember a chap called Steve Mitchell having a chat to me, who was head of everything news, saying, you know, you've got to be careful here, don't trivialise it. And I think the first link, 7:30 link on our first show, Chris had said something to me during the bulletin or interrupted the bulletin, and I said, you know, you may have forgotten your toothbrush, but don't forget your manners. And Matthew Bannister came up to me and said, good, really good. And I thought, oh, right, OK.
Radio 1 Newsbeat, I'm Tina Ritchie.
Tina, did you see that dress last night?
Did you see the coverage? Yeah, I did indeed, yeah.
Did you see anything?
By the way, we should be calling you Lovey this morning rather than Christopher, shouldn't we?
Nobby.
Lovey.
Oh,
Lovey.
Sorry.
Well, that as well, of course.
Well, you can call me Lovey.
So would you
ever wear a dress like that, Tina?
No, I couldn't quite carry it off, I don't think.
Not for anyone?
Maybe.
Anyone in particular, maybe?
Don't forget your manners. You may have forgotten your toothbrush, but don't forget your manners.
Sorry. Monday, Tuesday,
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So I was always reading the news in Broadcasting House, whereas you were doing your stuff in Egton. And every morning I'd come across and we'd have a meeting and I'd...
I don't remember any of this.
Do you know what?
I don't remember having any sort of meetings about anything ever.
I remember John teaching me how to make coffee before the show.
Right, if you're going to be on the radio, Holly, what you got to do is learn how to make a decent cup.
I have never forgotten how John reminded... It was just before we went on air and we were up in our sort of... top office. And you said to me, John, this stuck with me my whole life. You said to me, with the kettle, you boil the kettle, you put your coffee granules in, and then you put your milk in, and then when you pour the hot water in, that burns the milk, and that makes a good cup of coffee. So it wasn't even real coffee we were talking about.
You could get weeks on Instagram with things like that these days.
That is as much
like a barista.
That is as much as of a meeting as I think I ever had about the radio.
Are you sure, T? I promise you. Well,
were you all there in the meeting?
You're all there, but you're all pissed or tired or just grunting.
That's why you were hired, because you were the one that was trying to hold it all together around, in and around this maelstrom.
No, Holly was quite on form because Holly would read a list of what was happening, possibly, and then I'd go over and say, right, we're leading with X, Y, and Z, and it's really serious, and you cannot crash the front of the bulletin, and don't talk to me through it. Well, of course.
He crashed it, talked through it.
And it was the sound effects through the bulletin. Quite often there were rabbits or explosions.
or horns, lots of horns.
Musical instruments. Yeah. But on the whole, when it was bad news, he did, because we did have some terrible things happen.
Absolutely,
While we were on.
And we handled it,
And he handled
it. But personal life-wise... When you say crossing boundaries, we did talk about we were talking about this in previous podcasts, how we were kind of characters of ourselves to a certain extent, but also, you know, Dan and Lisa getting married on air, and John and his kids, and me and my boyfriend.
Me and my boyfriend.
I think I said it on one of the other ones. Is Matthew Bannister, controller.
Yes.
The fat controller. said to me the two things that rate highly with your listeners are Chris talking to famous people, because at that point the way he spoke to famous people was unique. And the soap opera aspect of the show. That was a big, big thing. Is that because, of course, we were on the air talking about everything, and you were in the barrel as well.
Yeah, obviously, you know, I was right in there because I was going out with, well, I think he outed me on air, and then the Daily Bloody Mirror followed me around for 2 weeks, us around for 2 weeks.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of issues. Tina, what do you think of Nikki Campbell?
Fine. Radio 1, 2 till 4?
Great.
I remember a snapper jumping on the top of the car. On the top of the car to get a picture of us together because we were super careful. I mean, Nicky
was...
So you're
talking about Nicky Campbell
yes,
here.
Yes, Nicky wasn't...
Nicky Crumble, to give him his showbiz name.
Yeah, his showbiz name is Nicky Crumble. He was married, but he was separated. Crumble. I mean, it was a bloody tabloid gift, wasn't it? It was a tabloid gift, our situation.
And Nicky was on Radio 1 at the time, wasn't he?
Yes.
You were like the Posh and Becks then at that time, were you, prior to that?
I think that's slightly excessive, Dan.
The Meghan and Harry.
Not really, but it was tabloid more fodder, wasn't it? It was more grist to his...
Nicky Campbell on 1FM.
Across the UK, Britain's favourite Radio 1.
We were talking about the Riffle Roadshow. And you came to that.
Yeah, it was the only roadshow.
Came
honestly.
On the stage, didn't you? And I remember you had a yellow outfit on. Remember?
Oh, that's so funny.
I know.
Is that a really
short skirt?
Yeah, a short skirt.
I remember that, yeah.
It was too short. My mother wouldn't have liked that. I remember... The memories... it's speechless. Driffield, oh, my Lord. So, you know, months running up to doing the breakfast show, I'd been doing, like, serious stuff. I'd been to Angola looking for displaced people. I've been to Florida looking, investigating murders, all sorts of really serious things. And then I'm walking on stage in Driffield.
The Magnificent Seven.
Kicking footballs at children.
And I do remember having an out-of-body experience thinking, God, you know, do Tina remember this? Because this is never going to happen to you ever, ever again. And I remember the roar of the crowd and I could feel it on my chest.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, we gave you the big intro and you came.
Oh, my Lord.
I know, I remember you had a microphone. You had your microphone and Chris was saying something and you went, Christopher.
That's right.
And he went, oh, who's that?
Christopher.
What was that?
Christopher.
If it's not Tina Ritchie, the newsreader.
No.
Is that her? I've forgotten her.
It's me.
Are you here or are you in London?
Tina.
Are you here?
Tina,
are you really here?
I'm here.
Well, see, Tina, the thing is, what a lot of people don't believe is when I say that you're 5'10", you got blonde hair, you wear short skirts, they think I'm making it up because you can do it on the radio. Mm. And you're going to have to come out here, team, because otherwise they're going to believe that's you.
Really?
Yeah, they want to see if you really look like that or if I just make it up. So, Tina, will you come out?
Now.
Please.
Now. Okay.
All right.
It was incredible. I mean,
and they went,
yeah. I mean,
the newsreader's never had such a great reception.
Once in a lifetime experience for Tina Ritchie, the newsreader. Yeah, it was amazing.
Tina, tell us about Top of the Pops, because I remember we all went down to Elstree.
Yeah.
I can remember vaguely doing it because he'd been asked to present a link or the whole thing.
Well, all the DJs, don't you remember? All the DJs used to present Top of the Pops, didn't they?
And Evans had his go in the barrel.
Yeah.
And we all went. I remember going down there and it was the hallowed Top of the Pops studio.
This is Top of the Pops. And if you turn over now, your TV will automatically explode. Or even worse.
I don't know. On air, he said, I think Tina should do a link. And then we spent the whole show.
Oh, did we? Talking about what you were going to do in the link.
Talking about what I was going to do, you know, or, you know, people phoning in or people texting in or whatever they did those days.
And he definitely wheeled us all into shot. So there is one link on Top of the Pops. We're all stood there mugging like the other kids at Top of the Pops did through all the years.
Mm.
But what did you have to do a solo link?
Link and I had to introduce UB40.
UB40.
Can you imagine?
First time in 8 years, live and exclusive on Top of the Pops, it's UB40.
I had studio makeup, which was not very good. I looked ridiculous. And I had a dress on that was ridiculous. It was like a handkerchief and it was sparkly. And I remember it as a thing, doing the link. It was over in a nanosecond.
Yeah.
And there we go.
So you just did a piece to camera?
Piece to camera saying
the camera
something.
Go, and now here's
UB40, yeah.
So, Tina, looking back, obviously with this podcast, we've been talking a lot about just reminiscing and how funny it was and how we still can make each other laugh quite a lot. But just remembering the daft jingles and all the features we did and the fun that we had every day. But from your point of view, what was your best bits?
Well, I mean, the whole thing was a riot, wasn't it? It was just one of those jobs. You know, we're getting up at 4 in the morning. I was getting up at 4 in the morning. But I really genuinely look forward to going to work every day. You never knew what was going to happen. Mm. It made me happy to my bones.
Yeah.
And when I look back on it today, it was the best job I've ever had, you know? It really was. And I've had a really good career. I have a great job now. But in terms of life-affirming stuff that went on, it was absolutely fantastic. I remember being really happy. And that's what I take away from it.
When we got fired...
No, we fired from Radio 1, we left, didn't we? Or we got fired?
I think we got fired.
Well, that's a very good question, Daniel. He got fired, so I mean, if he goes, we go, really.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, there was a period of darkness with him. Do you remember that?
There were highs and lows.
Because what had happened, Danny Baker had introduced him to Howard Stern.
Baba Booey is the worst person to be my producer because when I start to blow off steam, I need somebody to sort of. Just to listen. You know what it is? You always run out of the room, man. I'm not yelling at you. No, I'm just discussing And you know what? It's good for you to learn to hear what upsets me.
I know what upsets you.
And of course, back then, it wasn't like now where you could just go online and listen to the Howard Stern show now, like, or you can listen to any radio station anywhere in the world now. You couldn't do it back then. And somehow he got some Howard Stern tapes of the show and was listening to him. And he thought, right, I'm going to become the Howard Stern of British radio. And he did go into a very dark period because he wasn't playing any music. There was one show. He played one record in an hour.
He played one record
in an
hour.
It was Neil Sedaka.
And it was like Neil Sedaka or something.
Not exactly in the Radio 1 remit.
So, then he was doing all this really dark stuff. And I just kind of felt, it felt uncomfortable in the studio.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, and I was getting dragged into Matthew. You were getting dragged at Dan, getting dragged into Matthew every day. You know, come on, boys, you've
and
got
Matthew
to get me out
was
of this.
Getting and, dragged into.
It was further up,
further
and,
up
and
the
it was
chain,
really
was
causing quite a stir. And then I remember Chris coming to me and saying, I need to talk to you. And he said, I don't think I want to do this anymore. I've created this monster. So I then go and see Matthew, and Matthew's like, you know, on his fag, trenching up and down his office, you know, John, what are we going to do? He wants to leave. So I managed to talk him back off the edge at that point, because I thought, this is not going to be good for any, I'm being quite selfish for all of us, really. I thought we'd all be out of work, you know, and it's not fair. So he kind of got out of that darkness and the fog. And sort of came back, you know, to the light, and then became, you know, funny and entertaining again, and more importantly, playing records.
In hindsight, I don't know whether, John, you look back on it thinking it did start going a bit darker.
It was becoming untenable, I think, you know.
It was a pressure, you know, Radio 1 breakfast show. Yeah. It was big.
Well, it was that, but also, you know, he was genuinely tired. You know, TFI Friday was on the air at that point.
Yes.
And as that was really starting to, you know, really gain traction and becoming a big hit, and the big hit that it did become, you know, that was time-consuming for him. And so he's got that, you know, plus the breakfast show, plus all the other shenanigans that goes on in his life.
And he's a perfectionist.
Yeah, and that's going to be, that's key to it, isn't it? Because I think, absolutely. You know, that would always be a recurring thing.
You know, TFI Friday would start on Tuesday for him. You know, it's not just turning up on the Friday, obviously. So it'd be Tuesday, you know, script meetings with Danny Baker, blah, 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 and then rehearsals, and then Thursday all day at the studio. So he'd come straight off the air of the radio show over to the studio, to the TV studio, rehearsals all day, you know, again, and then on Friday on show day, straight over to the studio.
Yeah, massive, massive pressure on himself.
Pressure, you know, and he's holding that show together brilliantly. You know,
But I remember that was a recurring thing where I think it was on Radio 1 when he said to me, oh, you know, have you seen Collins and McConey? Aren't they brilliant? And he was already sort of panicking. He used to say to me, you know, once you're at the front, they're pulling at your collar, the new boys, you know. He was always aware of that. And I think you aren't. He wanted it always to be brilliant. It's got to be brilliant. Rightly so. That would be where the mania would come from, because it was like, if it isn't brilliant, why am I doing it?
Well, outside of work, he didn't really have a life, did he?
No, I mean, so I think that's my
point.
I mean,
you know, he wasn't married, he didn't have a family, so he didn't have a lot of the things that a lot of us had, and he didn't really have anything to go to. That's why he'd always want to do the show on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
That's why we had to go in to do the show on Christmas Day, because he didn't have anything to do on Christmas
Day. And also, don't underestimate the brilliant chunky story behind, you know, I want Fridays off. I'm not saying it was purely that. He once said to me, and I don't know if I've said it before, you know, I asked him about presenting and he said, I do the best impression of Chris Evans anybody can do, which sums it up because he gets it. He knows what he's doing. He's not stupid. He's very, 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 very good at it. And I think the Fridays off thing was like on many layers. It was an out of the show. Yes, he was probably tired. Yes, he was probably driving himself to distraction. But you know, I think
it started as a genuine request. He wanted Fridays off and he couldn't quite understand because not many people would say no to him.
Yeah.
As we know, he's a very strong character. And, you know, Matthew just said, well, no, you can't do that, I'm afraid, because it doesn't work like that. It's 5 days and that's what the breakfast show is and blah, blah, blah. And we came up with lots of scenarios. Oh, look, you know, you could have a 3-day weekend breakfast show. You know, whoever's doing the weekend breakfast show could do Friday. So it has some continuity across the weekend, blah, blah, blah. I think it started off as a genuine request. I've got to have Fridays off because I'm tired. Then when Matthew said no, it became something else that he could lock into, as you say, Dan, and go, oh, actually, I can, And then he goes away and thinks about it and gets quite dark and upset about it. And then it all just really started to implode.
From ITN, News at 10 with Trevor McDonald.
The disc jockey Chris Evans is leaving Radio 1's popular breakfast show. He asked the BBC management to have every Friday off, but it refused and he resigned.
I always thought we were fired, but it never bothered me.
I don't think it was fired. I think it was just going, here's a break point, let's draw a line under it and finish it because he's not going to get Fridays off, let's move on.
Johnny boy.
Yeah.
You remember when you phoned me and we talked about doing this, talked about making these podcasts and reminiscing and I just thought, you know, what are we going to talk about? And we've managed to do about 400 episodes, it feels like, and there's a whole load of this stuff. But I guess at some point we've got to kind of sum up what we all thought about it. You know, what are your abiding thoughts? Have you got a kind of overarching thing? When people ask you about it and say, oh, you did that, what was that like?
Well, I think from the very first one, I think we changed the face of breakfast radio. And we did. And there wasn't a master plan. Nobody sat down. We never sat down and said, this is what we're going to do. And we're going to change radio, breakfast radio. And we're going to turn it on its head like it's never been done before. We never did that, did we? There was not a blueprint.
No.
We just went in and said, this is what we do. Obviously, you have that natural evolution. And it became what it became. And it's now pretty much every breakfast show you listen to in some form or another is based on what we did, you know. And not as good, obviously, because they try and force it, you know, and we never tried to force anything.
It was very unforced, wasn't it?
Yeah, because you just get found out straight away if you're not being true to yourselves. So it was a brilliant moment in time, I think.
And the stars aligned, didn't they? Because it was not only the music, it was not only the mid-90s, it was our friendship that worked, that clicked. It was like something just clicks. What was your sum up then, Dan, of that time? I mean, 25 years ago now.
I think, Holly, what you said, you know, the stars being in alignment is very, 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 very true. I think people have tried to recreate it, as John said, and maybe force it. Get a girl, get a guy, get a funny bloke, get a thing, you know. We didn't do that. We just all came together. For me, I would get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go and do the big breakfast on Channel 4. I couldn't wait to get there. It was like going to a party every day. It was so exciting. And I remember driving to those studios and thinking, this is the greatest job in the world. I loved it. I'll never better this. And then we did the Radio 1 Breakfast Show. And it was even better. 'Cause it's a bittersweet symphony that's live. The one thing for me is I look back and think, do I appreciate what I did? I hope I do. But I don't remember at the time thinking, oh, my God.
No.
Now I look back and think, oh, my God.
I don't think you ever do. I think whatever you do in life, you know, looking back is the easy part. It's like having a family. You know, when you have children, you probably don't appreciate them as much as you should at the time.
it was the best job in the world. Yeah. And it just worked, didn't it? And I think that's the most abiding thing I take from that time, was that, because people have always said, oh, would you go back and would you do it again? And you think, no, because it had to be 1995.
No.
No, but it had to be the mid-90s.
Yeah.
Because that's, yeah, it was the stars aligning. The yeah. music, the sport, yeah. the people.
Do you miss getting everything. Up at 4 o'clock in the morning?
Oh, well, I kind of still do.
Oh, well, you got a milk round.
Hang on, John, how old are you now? Because you get up not beyond that much now, do you?
No, I'm a breakfast show would be perfect for me. Because I'm a wee now. I get up, obviously. No, a breakfast show would be perfect for me. In fact, graveyard shift would be better for me, because I'm not going to wait.
It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your life.
Well, I'm Dan McGrath, and that was Breaking Breakfast. We hope you enjoyed some of the stories behind the radio show, and thank you very much for listening to the podcast. Thanks also to everyone at BBC Radio 1, to Chris, obviously, to all the bands we work with, and anyone who was involved in the show in any way back then. Thank you, thank you. And particularly if you're one of the millions of listeners. Leave us a review or rating and use the hashtag Breaking Breakfast, all one word, to talk about it on socials. It's recorded at Canon Studios and the series producer is Nick Goodman. Breaking Breakfast is a Bounce production.